Today's class will be in two parts. We will read half of chapter 60 from Krishna book, entitled Talks Between Krishna and Rukmini. We will just cover the first half, which deals with Krishna teasing Rukmini. Then we will have a short intermission of some songs, and then we will reread the same section, but this time hearing it from the purports of the Srimad Bhagavatam itself. So in this way we will study this section twice. Today's class is dedicated to my good friend and well-wisher, Bill Schubert, and I am praying that he advances more and more in Krishna consciousness throughout his life. So let us begin now with this chapter 60, and first I will chant my two favorite mantras, Trinadapi Sunichena Tarar Iva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. That if I want to easily and always chant the holy name of God, I must be meek and humble, more tolerant than a tree, ready to give all respects to others, and not care about any respect from anyone in any corner. And then my second favorite prayer, Harenama, Harenama, Harenama eva kibalam, kalo nastyeva, 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 gatir anyata. So let us begin with today's class from Krishna book. Chapter 60, Talks Between Krishna and Rukmini. Once upon a time, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the bestower of all knowledge upon all living entities, from Brahma down to the insignificant ant, was sitting in the bedroom of Rukmini, who was engaged in the service of the Lord, along with her assistant maidservants. Krishna was sitting on the bedstead of Rukmini, and the maidservants were fanning him with chamaras, also known as yaktail fly whisks. Lord Krishna's dealings with Rukmini as a perfect husband are a perfect manifestation of the supreme perfection of the Personality of Godhead. There are many philosophers who propound a concept of the absolute truth in which God cannot do this or God cannot do that. They deny the incarnation of God or the supreme absolute truth in human form. But actually, the fact is different. God cannot be subject to our imperfect sensual activities. God is the all-powerful, omnipresent Personality of Godhead. And by His supreme will, He can not only create, maintain, and annihilate the whole cosmic manifestation, but He can also descend as an ordinary human being to execute the highest mission. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, whenever there are discrepancies in the discharge of human occupational duties, God descends. God is not forced to appear by any external agency, but He descends by His own internal potency in order to reestablish the standard functions of human activities and simultaneously annihilate the disturbing elements in the progressive march of human civilization. In accordance with this principle of transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, God descended in His eternal form as Sri Krishna in the dynasty of the Yadus. The palace of Rukmini was wonderfully furnished. Hanging from the ceiling were many canopies with laces bedecked with pearl garlands, and the whole palace was illuminated by the effulgence of valuable jewels. There were many flower groves of Mallika and Chameli, which are considered the most fragrant flowers in India. There were many clusters of these plants, with blooming flowers enhancing the beauty of the palace. And because of the exquisite fragrance of the flowers, little groups of humming bees gathered around the trees, and at night the pleasing moonshine glittered throughout the network of holes in the windows. There were many heavily flowered trees of Parijata, and the mild wind stirred the fragrance of the flowers all around. Incense burned within the walls of the palace, and the fragrant smoke leaked out of the window shutters. Within the room were mattresses covered with white bed sheets. The bedding was as soft and white as milk foam. In this situation, Lord Sri Krishna sat very comfortably and enjoyed the service of Rukmini Ji, who was assisted by her maidservants. Rukmini was very eager to get the opportunity to serve her husband. Her husband was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She therefore wanted to serve the Lord personally, and thus she took the handle of the chamara from the hand of her maidservant and began to move the fan. The handle of the chamara was made of gold and bedecked with valuable jewels, and it became more beautiful when taken by Rukmini, because all of her fingers were beautifully set with jeweled rings. Her legs were decorated with jeweled ankle bells, which rang very softly between the pleats of her sari. Rukmini's raised breasts were smeared with kumkum and saffron. Thus her beauty was enhanced by the reflection of the reddish color emanating from her covered breasts. Her high hips were decorated with a jeweled lace girdle, and a locket of great effulgence hung on her neck. Above all, because she was engaged in the service of Lord Krishna, although at that time she was old enough to have grown-up sons, her beautiful body was beyond compare in the three worlds. And when we take account of her beautiful face, it appears that the curling hair on her head, the beautiful earrings on her ears, her smiling mouth, and her necklace of gold all combined to shower rains of nectar. And it was definitely proved that Rukmini was none other than the original goddess of fortune, who was always engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Narayana. The pastimes of Krishna and Rukmini in Dwaraka are accepted by great authorities as manifestations of those of Narayan and Lakshmi, which are of an exalted opulence. The pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan are simple and rural, distinguished from the polished urban characteristics of those of Dwaraka. The characteristics of Rukmini were unusually bright, and Krishna was very much satisfied with her behavior. Krishna had experienced that when Rukmini was offered a parijata flower by Narada Muni, Satyabhama had become envious of her co-wife and had immediately demanded a similar flower from Krishna. In fact, she could not be pacified until she was promised the whole tree. And Krishna actually fulfilled his promise. He brought the tree down to the earth planet from the heavenly kingdom. After this episode, Krishna expected that because Satyabhama had been rewarded with a full tree of parijata, Rukmini would now also demand something. Rukmini did not mention anything of the incident, however, for she was grave and simply satisfied in her service. Krishna wanted to see her a bit irritated, and therefore he schemed to see the beautiful face of Rukmini in an irritated condition. Although Krishna had more than 16,100 wives, he used to behave with each of them with familial affection. He would create a particular situation between himself and his wife, in which the wife would criticize him in the irritation of love, and Krishna would enjoy this. In this case, because Krishna could not find any fault with Rukmini, she was grave and always engaged in his service, he, smilingly in great love, began to speak to her just to provoke her loving anger. Rukmini was the daughter of Bhishmaka, a powerful king. Thus Krishna did not address her as Rukmini. Instead, he addressed her this time as the princess. My dear princess, it is very surprising. Many great personalities in the royal order wanted to marry you. Although not all of them were kings, all possessed the opulence and riches of the kingly order. They were well-behaved, learned, famous as among kings, beautiful in their bodily features and personal qualifications, liberal, very powerful in strength, and advanced in every respect. They were not unfit in any way. And over and above that, your father and your brother had no objection to such a marriage. On the contrary, they gave their word of honor that you would be married with Shishupal. Indeed, the marriage was sanctioned by both your parents. Shishupal was a great king, and he was so lusty and mad after your beauty that if he had married you, I think he would have always remained with you just like your faithful servant. In comparison to Shishupal, with his personal qualities, I am nothing. And you may personally realize it. I am surprised that you rejected the marriage with Shishupal and accepted me, who am inferior in comparison to Shishupal. I think myself completely unfit to be your husband because you are so beautiful, sober, grave, and exalted. So, may I inquire from you the reason that induced you to accept me? Now, of course, I may address you as my beautiful wife, but still, I may inform you of my actual position. I am inferior to all those princes who wanted to marry you. First of all, you may know that I was so much afraid of Jarasandha that I could not dare live on the land. And thus, I have constructed this house within the water of the sea. It is not my business to disclose this secret to others, but you must know that I am not very heroic. I am a coward, and I am afraid of my enemies. Still, I am not safe, because all the great kings of the land are inimical to me. I have personally created this inimical feeling by fighting with them in so many ways. Another fault is that although I am on the throne of Dwaraka, I have no immediate claim. Although I got a kingdom by killing my maternal uncle, Kamsa, the kingdom was to go to my grandfather, so actually, I have no possession of a kingdom. Besides that, I have no fixed aim in life. People cannot understand me very well. What is the ultimate goal of my life? They know very well that I was a cowherd boy in Vrindavan. People expected that I would follow in the footsteps of my foster father, Nanda Maharaj, and be faithful to Srimati Radharani and all her friends in the village of Vrindavan. But all of a sudden, I left them. I wanted to become famous. I wanted to become a famous prince. Still, I could not have any kingdom, nor could I rule as a prince. People are bewildered about my ultimate goal of life. They do not know whether I am a cowherd boy or a prince, or whether I am the son of Nanda Maharaj or the son of Vasudeva. Because I have no fixed aim in life, people may call me a vagabond. Therefore, I am surprised that you could select such a vagabond husband. Besides this, I am not very much polished, even in social etiquette. A person should be satisfied with one wife, but you see that I have married many times, and I have more than 16,000 wives. I cannot please all of them as a polished husband. My behavior with them is not very nice, and I know that you are very conscious of it. I sometimes create a situation with my wives which is not very happy. Because I was trained in a village in my childhood, I am not well acquainted with the etiquette of urban life. I do not know the way to please a wife with nice words and behavior. And from practical experience, it is found that any woman who follows my way or becomes attracted to me is ultimately left to cry for the rest of her life. In Vrindavan, many gopis were attracted to me, and now I have left them, and they are living, but they are simply crying for me in separation. I have heard from Akura and Uddhava that since I left Vrindavan, all my cowherd boyfriends the gopis and Radharani and my foster father, Nanda Maharaj, are simply crying constantly for me. I have left Vrindavan for good, and now I am engaged with the queens of Dwarka. But I am not well behaved with any of you. So, you can very easily understand that I have no steadiness of character. I am not a very reliable husband. The net result of being attracted to me is to acquire a life of bereavement only. My dear beautiful princess, you may also know that I am always penniless. Just after my birth, I was carried penniless to the house of Nanda Maharaj, and I was raised just like a cowherd boy. Although my foster father possessed many hundreds and thousands of cows, I was not the proprietor of even one of them. I was simply entrusted with taking care of them and tending them, but I was not the proprietor. Here also, I am not the proprietor of anything, but I am always penniless. But there is no cause to lament for such a penniless condition. I possess nothing in the past, so why should I lament that I do not possess anything at present? You may note also that my devotees are not very opulent. They also are very poor in worldly goods. Persons who are very rich, possessing worldly wealth, they are not interested in devotion to me or Krishna consciousness. On the contrary, when a person becomes penniless, whether by force or by circumstance, he or she may become interested in me if they get the proper opportunity. Persons who are proud of their riches, even if they are offered association with my devotees, do not take advantage of consciousness of me. In other words, the poorer class of men may have some interest in me, but rich men have no interest. I think, therefore, that your selection of me was not very intelligent. You appear very intelligent, trained by your father and brother, but ultimately you have made a great mistake in selecting your life's companion. But there is no harm. The mistake can still be rectified, and it is better late than never. You are at liberty to select a suitable husband who is actually an equal to you in opulence, family tradition, wealth, beauty, education, in all respects. Whatever mistakes you may have made, they may now be forgotten. Now, you may chalk out your own lucrative path of life. Usually, a person does not establish a marital relationship with a person who is either higher or lower than his position. My dear daughter of the King of Vidarbha, I think you did not consider very sagaciously before your marriage. Thus, you have made a wrong selection by choosing me as your husband. You mistakenly heard about my having a very exalted character, although factually I was nothing more than a beggar. Even without seeing me and seeing my actual position, but simply by hearing about me, You selected me as your husband. That was not very rightly done. Therefore, since it is better late than never, I advise you to now select one of the great Kshatriya princes and accept him as your life's companion, and you may now reject me. Krishna was proposing that Rukmini divorce him at a time when Rukmini already had many grown-up children. Therefore, Krishna's whole proposition appeared to be something unexpected, because according to the Vedic culture, there was no such thing as separation of husband and wife by divorce. Nor was it possible for Rukmini to choose a new husband at her advanced age when she had many married sons. To Rukmini, every one of Krishna's proposals appeared crazy, and she was surprised that Krishna could say such things. Simple as she was, her anxiety was increasing more and more at the thought of separation from Krishna. Krishna continued, "After all, you have to prepare yourself for your next life. I therefore advise that you select someone who can help you in both this life and the next. As for me, I am completely unable to help. My dear, beautiful princess, you know that all the members of the princely order, including Shalva, Jarasandha, Dantafrakra, and even your elder brother Rukmi, they are all my enemies. They do not like me at all. They hate me from the core of their hearts. All those princes were very much puffed up with their worldly possessions, and they did not care a fig for anyone who came before them. In order to teach them some lessons, I agreed to kidnap you according to your desire. Otherwise, I actually have no love for you, although you loved me even before our marriage. As I have already explained, I am not very much interested in family life, nor am I interested in love between husband and wife. By nature, I am not very fond of family life, wife, children, home, and opulences. As my devotees are always neglectful of all these worldly possessions, I am also like that. Actually, I am interested in self-realization. That gives me pleasure, and not this family life." After submitting his statement, Lord Krishna suddenly stopped. So I'll begin by chanting three mantras. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Trinadapi Sunichena Tarariva Sahishnuna Amanina Manadena Kirtaniya Sadahari. Hariyanama 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 eva kivalam, kalau nastyeva, 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 gatir anyata. So first the chapter summary. Chapter 60 of the 10th canto, Lord Krishna teases Queen Rukmini. Just one word before we start. There are 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srila Prabhupada, in his translation of Bhagavatam, gave each canto of Srimad Bhagavatam a particular theme based on those 10 subject matters. So canto 10 is called the Summum Bonum. That is a Latin phrase. Summum Bonum means the ultimate good. This chapter describes how Lord Krishna provoked anger in Queen Rukmani with joking words and then consoled her, thus demonstrating the opulence of a lover's quarrel. One day, Lord Krishna sat at ease in Queen Rukmini's bedroom, while she and her maidservants attended to serve him in various ways. Rukmini always responded to Sri Krishna's moods, whatever they might be. On this particular occasion, the Lord looked at Rukmini, whose beauty was faultless, and began to tease her. He said, "Previously, many wealthy kings, worthy of you in their appearance and character, wanted to marry you. In fact, your father and brother intended to give you in marriage to Shishupal. Why then did you accept such an unsuitable husband as me, who once renounced his kingdom and fled to the sea in fear of Jarasandha? Besides, I transgress worldly morality, and because I own nothing, I am dear to other paupers. Certainly the well-to-do would not worship one such as me. When a man and woman share the same social class, influence, physical beauty, and so on, marriage or friendship can flourish between them. But out of short-sightedness, you have accepted a husband who lacks every good quality and who is glorified by beggars. It would have been better if you had married some prominent warrior. Then you might have been happy in your life and in the next. Your brother Rukmi and kings like Shishupal, they all hate me. And it was only to cut down their pride that I kidnapped you. But as for such things as body, home, wife, and children, I am indifferent to them, because I am the self-satisfied personality of Godhead, transcendental to all material affairs." Sri Krishna stopped speaking, having destroyed Queen Rukmini's confidence that she was her husband's favorite. So, that's the amount of the summary that we read today. So, now we will go to the purports to this same section. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti poetically notes that in this chapter, Rukmini Devi is like a fragrant camphor crushed on the grinding stone of Lord Krishna's speech. In other words, the lovely, chaste qualities of Rukmini will become manifest as a result of Lord Krishna's apparently insensitive words, just as camphor's fragrance becomes manifest when granules of camphor are crushed by a grinding stone. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti further points out that Rukmini is personally serving the Lord because Krishna is Jagat Gurum, the spiritual master of the universe, and Krishna is Patim, her husband. Now we will go to the next purport. As stated in the sixth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Dharmang tu sakshad Bhagavat pranitam. Religion is the law established by God. The word setu means a boundary or limit, as in the case of a dike. The earth is raised up on both sides of a river or canal so that water will not deviate from its proper path. Similarly, God establishes laws so that people who follow them can peacefully progress along the path back home, back to Godhead. These laws, which are meant to guide human behavior, are thus called setu. A further note on the word setu. Earth that is raised up to separate agricultural fields or to form a causeway or bridge is also called setu. Thus, in the ninth canto of the Bhagavatam, the word setu is used to indicate the bridge Lord Ramachandra built to Sri Lanka. Since the laws of God act as a bridge to take us from material life to liberated spiritual life, this additional sense of the word setu certainly enriches its use here. And we go to the next purport. According to Srila Sridhar Swami, Rukmini's palace was quite famous then as now, and the descriptions of that palace give a glimpse into its opulence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that the word Amalai in this verse may also be read as Arunai, which would indicate that when this pastime took place, the moon had just risen, bathing the entire palace in beautiful ruddy moonshine. Next purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that as Queen Rukmini fanned her lord with broad strokes, the jewels and gold on her beautiful limbs resounded with her effort. Next purport. Srila Sridhar Swami has quoted an interesting verse spoken by Sri Parashara in the Vishnu Purana. Devatve deva deheyam manushyatve cha manushi Vishnur dehanu rupam vai karot yeshat manas tanum. When the Lord appears as a demigod, she, the goddess of fortune, takes the form of a demigoddess, and when he appears as a human being, she takes a human-like form. Thus, the body she assumes matches the one Lord Vishnu takes. Next purport. Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti adds that as Lord Krishna is even more beautiful than the Lord of Vaikuntha, Lord Krishna's consort Rukmini Devi is even more attractive than the goddess of fortune in the Vaikuntha world. Next purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti comments as follows. The Lord's mentality can be understood as follows. When I gave Rukmini a single flower from the heavenly Parijata tree, Satyabhama showed such a torrent of fury that I could not pacify her even by bowing down at her feet. Only when I gave her a whole Parijata tree was she satisfied. Rukmini, however, did not display any anger even when she saw me give Satyabhama the whole tree. So how can I enjoy the nectar of angry words from this wife, who never feels jealousy, who is supremely sober, and who always speaks pleasingly? Thus considering, the Supreme Lord decided, if I speak like this to her, I may be able to provoke her anger. This is how some authorities explain Krishna's speech to Rukmini. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the words Balavadbi Krita Dveshan Pray indicate that Lord Krishna opposed almost all the contemporary kings during his incarnation, befriending only a few, such as the Pandavas and loyal members of his dynasty. Of course, as stated in the beginning of the 10th canto, Lord Krishna appeared specifically because the earth was overburdened by innumerable bogus kings, and he wanted to remove this burden. Finally, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti points out that the word chakta nirpasanan, giving up the king's throne, indicates that after Lord Krishna killed Kamsa, he humbly gave the royal throne to his grandfather Ugrasena, although Krishna was entitled to it. And now we go to the next purport. Like the Lord, his devotees are uninterested in material sense gratification, being awakened to the superior pleasure of Krishna consciousness. Those who are intoxicated by material wealth cannot appreciate the supreme wealth of the kingdom of God. Next purport. Persons of superior and inferior qualities may live together in a relationship of master and servant, or teacher and student, but marriage and friendship are proper only between those of equal status. The word bhava in the context of marriage indicates that a couple should have a similar capacity to produce good offspring. Lord Krishna here presents himself as materially unqualified. In fact, the Lord does not have any material qualities. He lives in pure spiritual existence. Thus, all the Lord's opulences are eternal and not of the flimsy, mundane sort. So that ends all of the purports for today. So we will stop and end our class at this point.